Excelsior, and welcome again, true believers, to another installment of Zach and Tavy's Marvelous Adventure. My name is Zach Wallner.
And I'm Tavy Phillips.
And we're here going on a journey through the Marvel Cinematic Universe from the beginning. I, a seasoned expert, and Tavy, a relative newcomer, but with each new project, getting to know it more and more.
Learning a little more every time, every week.
Exactly. So what film and who are we here to talk about today?
This week we watched Thor. Norse.
Yes, the god of thunder himself.
That's right.
So I'm guessing you probably know of him through the basic Norse mythology end of it.
Yeah.
Right?
I had a general sense of Odin, Loki, Thor, Freya, just memories from childhood. Not too many specifics, which I think is good because I'm sure they played fast and loose with the mythology. I got the sense they weren't exactly supposed to be the gods, but that they were possibly figures that people then worshipped as gods in societies,
yeah,
kind of a thing.
There's a throwaway line of dialogue in there to try to explain it, which when they made this is the fourth movie
right. In
the whole thing. And the first three, they're relatively speaking, fairly grounded down to earth. So Iron Man and Iron Man 2, he's a tech genius. He's rich. He's got the resources. He's got the knowledge. He builds flying suits of armor that can shoot blasts. Okay, maybe in a bunch of years, maybe that could be achieved. Other one, the Hulk is a little more outlandish. Guy has an experiment, gamma radiation. And when he gets mad, he turns into a big green monster. But still, it's in the realm of science and stuff.
We're basically on Earth. For all three of those movies, maybe a little bit into the atmosphere somewhat,
yes,
but in the general orbit of Earth.
Right. But
so
this
we
is,
definitely depart.
Yeah, this
for
is definitely
Thor.
A departure from that, where even though a sufficient chunk takes place on Earth, we're dealing with Asgard.
Right.
And with the whole thing of that line about, oh, yeah, well, they could have inspired these stories and some other segments in there. They're still, I think Marvel was still trying to be like, let's try to still keep everything somehow attached to reality and that it can be explained and stuff
right.
like that. We're dealing with these.
There's a science-y explanation-ishness to it.
Yeah, they feel they have to break it down away. And there's multiple instances in the film where they do that. Like, oh, Thor has a fireside talk with Jane. I know I'm jumping ahead a little here, but it's like, you call it science and we call it magic, where I come from a place where they're one and the same and that sort of thing. And he's breaking down the nine realms of the world tree, Yggdrasil.
That's right. We go from Earth, strictly on Earth, and it's not even our galaxy. We're going to other realms. Skip over the whole galaxy part.
Yeah.
We're complete other realms.
So it's beyond just being another planet. I guess they're treated as if they're aliens, basically. Superpowered aliens that may have inspired the mythology previously here on Earth. Though I feel there's holes in that, but we can get into that more later. But even if aliens, they're really distant. They're not some other planet in our solar system or our galaxy or anything. I don't know exactly how far away they're supposed to be, but you know they have this specific means of travel to get to and from Earth and Asgard and the other realms.
Yeah, it almost felt like alternate, not alternate, like other universe-y or dimension-y, but not really specific about what it is, just another plane. But they can look down a hole and see, right? I mean, what's his name, Heimdall? Can look right on down and see right down to Earth. So
yeah, he's all-seeing.
There's conduits and things, but
So in the comics, much like with Iron Man, he appeared first in an anthology series. He first appeared in Journey into Mystery number 83, which was August of 1962. And again, a Stan Lee, Jack Kirby creation, as so many of the early and core Marvel superheroes were. Once again, though, like Iron Man, the script, I think, was written by Stan Lee's brother, Larry Lieber. So it was a collaboration there. So still Stan input and probably inspiration and stuff. And they clearly took from that mythology and they built it out. And maybe the characters, especially early on, were a little more close to those stories because they were just taking that inspiration and then they were running with it. Where here we are decades later making it a film and trying to make it palatable to mass audiences and doing the whole magic science thing. So the film even starts on Earth. It's a Thor film, but it starts on Earth. We're in New Mexico, which we saw that was teased.
That was teased at the end of Iron Man 2.
And, you know, a little sprinkled throughout where they're like, oh, we're dealing with something in the Southwest region and, oh, I got to go to New Mexico. And they mentioned multiple times, oh, it's the land of enchantment. And actually, there's a billboard that shows up multiple times in this film. I don't know. Did you notice the billboard at all in the New Mexico town?
Billboard? I don't know that I did. What was the
billboard? It shows up a few times. It's a billboard for New Mexico, basically. It says Land of Enchantment, Journey into Mystery. So they snuck in the title of the comic Thor.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't have made that connection at all, not having known the comic. I see. So I didn't even notice that.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
that okay. So that was the original appearance of Thor in the comic.
Yeah, just the 83rd issue of a anthology series, which I thought was funny because I think Iron Man was in 38 of Tales of Suspense, so flip the number around. Just a little observation I picked up. But yeah, it starts in New Mexico and Earth, and it's like a little prelude. We see these human characters, and then they crash their car into Thor, who's being
Right.
beamed down to Earth, and then it kind of ends, and then we go backwards to see how it got there.
Right.
Before we go more into the story and the details and the little things here and there, let me just ask, what did you think of this film? What were your opinions or any thoughts or any questions?
Was fairly enjoyable. I think a little bit of it, we sort of, I enjoyed the Natalie Portman character. I think my major problem with the movie is that I don't find Chris Hemsworth to be charismatic as an actor. And so I was stretching credulity a little that Jane instantly falls for him. And I get it. I mean, I get the conceit is that he's muscular and blonde and stuff, but he just seemed not worthy of being the successor
How
to Odin to
appropriate.
me. Exactly. Thus the theme of the movie. But yeah, other than that sort of factor of not being particularly charmed by that performance, it was pretty fun. It had a great cast. You got your Anthony Hopkins, excuse
Yeah,
me, very much.
adds a bit of gravitas to the whole thing.
Yeah, and then I keep wanting to call him the Night King as a watcher of Game of Thrones, but that's not his name. I want to say L Lauf Laufey? What's the bad guy?
Laufey, yeah,
Laufey. Okay.
the king of the frost giants.
Frost giants. Okay. I kept thinking of them as ice gargoyles.
Might be a trivia question then when we get to that, honestly. Might be a hit with it.
But the actor who played that character is an actor named Colm Feore, who
Right.
is a Canadian, like Shakespearean actor that I know very well as the bad guy in a really obscure movie that I love by Dave Foley called The Wrong Guy.
Oh, okay.
From the 90s. And so whenever I see Colm Feore in something, I am happy because I love that movie and his performance. And he's a great villain. He was a great villain in this, I thought. A lot of makeup on that guy, but that was fun. I also like seeing, having just finished watching Andor, it was really fun to see. And I'm going to call him Stellar Skateboard. Not Stellan Skarsgård. That's a Jason Mantzoukas reference from a podcast called How Did This Get Made?
Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah, with
Yeah, they
Russell
always
and
refer to
June
him as
Raphael.
Stellar. Yeah, always refer to him as Stellar Skateboard. So I called him that throughout the movie. But it's fun to see like a 15 years younger version of that guy having just come out of the world of Andor and his character being really prominent in that.
Wait, yeah, I still gotta finish the second season. I think
Oh, it's a good time.
my wife caught some of it as I was watching, and she's interested now, so I think I'll have to go back to the first season and watch it
I
with
think it's probably the best Star Wars thing that's ever been done, as not a super Star Wars person.
Yeah, you know.
But yeah, so the cast of Thor was good. I was surprised Kenneth Branagh was the director, who I know as a Shakespearean director.
Well, I
I
think
mean,
that's probably why they picked him, because
right.
especially in the comics, as much as it pulled from mythology, they also in the comics they talk with the thou and thast, and
Yeah,
Stanley
okay.
really went with that Shakespearean thing. Actually, there was one line that I felt like it was very on the nose trying to be a Shakespearean line. It's later on, but Volstagg, he's one of the Warriors Three, the big guy,
The bearded dude with the
yeah,
beard. Yeah. Okay.
and
Beardo.
well, there's the other the
Oh,
one
they're all bearded, but one of them had like a Gimli beard, a
yeah.
Lord of the Rings Gimli beard,
Yeah.
and I think a fat suit, which I don't like, but
I know you're not a fan of
it
those.
wasn't over the top, so
No.
fine.
The comic character is actually larger, so they're toning it down a bit.
Okay, yeah, no, and I
Honestly.
appreciated that he's trying to be a specific type of shape. You know, you got to do a thing. So it wasn't terrible, but I was just like, oh, a fat suit.
And
But okay, so you.
they didn't especially play the weight for laughs.
No, I didn't think so. It was an acceptable fat suit.
Yeah,
Okay.
he's you
But
know
what?
he likes to eat, but
He likes
that's
to
about
eat.
the extent of it. So there's a line where because he's just lying around eating, where Thor's exiled and the friends are arguing among themselves, he says, "Do not mistake my appetite for apathy."
Oh, it was a great line.
I'm like, that's definitely trying to go Shakespearean
I almost just wrote
language.
that down because I like it so much and I feel like I'm going to steal it. That was probably my favorite line in the movie now that you mention it.
Good,
That
I'm
is,
glad I
and you're
brought
right.
it up.
You're right. There is a sort of Shakespearean feel. And there's also, this is like the last movie we watched, kind of a daddy issues movie.
Yeah,
'Cause,
I think that's
you
a
know?
theme in some of the early MCU properties, and then people noticed that. So it's probably not
Yeah.
the last of that that you're going to see.
Sure. And that's pretty Shakespearean too. I mean, Hamlet. Like, you
Yeah,
know,
this is
there's
this
a.
whole battle for the throne and the
Right.
betrayal. So it's all very Shakespearean. So I'm sure that's why
Yes.
they brought Kenneth Branagh on. Well, why don't we just get this out of the way? We mentioned, obviously, the character created by Stan Lee. So
Right.
now it's time to play everyone's favorite Marvel podcast game.
Spot the Stan.
I love cameos.
where we see, if you can remember or you noticed, where his cameo took place and in what context. So do you remember where he showed up in Thor?
I do, and I'm going to preface this by saying when the movie started and we first got to, we flashed back to 985 AD and we started seeing all the Norse people, I thought, oh, please, please let Stanley be a Viking. That would be so cool.
But that would have been cool.
Yeah, right? That would have been amazing. But I was a little disappointed, but it was fine. I spotted him right away. He was one of the pickup truck drivers that was trying to yank Mjolnir out of the Sword in the Stone. Very Excalibur, yeah. By the way. Very in the Stone. And not able to succeed, obviously.
Now this is getting into more of the style of what his cameos are going forward, where it's like a little bit and it's played for laughs. Again, first couple in Iron Man 1 and 2 are just silent. And he's supposed to be Hugh Hefner and Larry King, basically. And Hulk, he takes the drink and goes like, oh, wow, and drops it. And that's very quick and gone. And it's just for dramatic effect. Now, this one is kind of the start of where they go and become from here. Okay, so you got that one. That's great. Good observation. While we're at the games, it's time for the trivia cards.
Oh boy, I'm nervous. Even though, again, I just watched it last night, there's always something I miss. So let's just do it.
Yeah, because I'm sure I have notes of things that might pop up in here. So this is a good way to get the conversation going.
Yep.
If anything does come up, we'll get to the notes. Okay, well, this already kind of came up. Who is Loki's true father?
Oh, what's his name? Laufey.
There
got
you
it,
go.
Right? Laufey.
Yep. He is a frost giant, as we see kind of when they first head off all hot-headed to Jotunheim, the land of the frost giants, and they're fighting, and one of them touches Volstagg, and it freezes a part of his arm. Then one touches Loki, and he's just like, huh? And it's,
Nothing happened. His
arm starts turning blue before it soon turns back to regular kind of white guy flesh tone.
Loki
so that's
color.
Like early kind of foreshadowing about his true nature.
Actually, I do have to break in because speaking of foreshadowing, it was clear to me, and not knowing anything about this movie, it was clear to me that he was responsible for the guys crashing the party when Thor was about to be crowned. I don't know why, but it seemed so obvious. Like, oh, his brother's behind this somehow. I don't know how yet. And even when he starts getting in trouble and Loki's going, oh no, calm down, trying to stop him from doing rash things, I was still like,
Yeah, even
I feel like the brother.
Even in telling him to not do it, he's manipulating things.
Yeah, he was totally manipulating him.
He's really good at it.
He's up to something. You could just tell. So anyway, I just want to
say probably also knew he was the god of mischief.
That's true. That's part of it.
That might have influenced you.
That might have been part of it, because he's very famously a trickster god.
Yeah, not exactly a trustworthy character.
Right, exactly. It's just like, I'm keeping my eye on that one.
Okay, I actually just blurted this one out, but in which realm was Loki born?
Jotunheim?
That's correct. That's the land of the frost giants. It's funny. I wrote a note. I feel like in this movie, they're more like the frost basketball players, because in the comics, they're literal giants.
Right.
Here, they're, 10
tall
foot
guys.
Tall, they're a little tall and they have ice powers, but giants, I think that's stretching it a bit.
Yeah.
Okay, this is interesting. They're giving you options. Name two of the four people who accompany Thor and Loki to Jotunheim. Points.
Okay,
if you get all of them, you get extra points.
This is tough because I can't remember those freaking names, but I do know one of them is Sif.
Okay.
The woman.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know that it's Sif and the Warriors 3 because they say that, I think, at some point. And I said, what a great band name, Sif and the Warriors 3. Yeah. Love that band.
Sure.
So Sif, and we just talked about it, so I got to remember his name now. What was Beardo's name? I got to tell you, these names are really hard to remember.
Mm.
Oh, geez. No, I can't. I only know Sif and the war. I don't know the names of the Warriors.
Yeah, their names, their individual
friend,
names don't especially come up much.
Yeah.
And it's kind of quick and you miss it. But the Warriors 3 are made up of Volstagg, who's the one we talked about.
Volstagg.
And then Fandral is the blonde guy with the sort of little kind of goatee thing going on. And Hogan is the Asian guy.
Cool.
Okay. What creature protects the casket from the Frost Giants' attack?
Oh, God. It looked like the scene in Ghostbusters when the gargoyles so they break out of the stone. I don't know what that thing was called, though. It was like a big old ice gargoyle guy.
No, not the ice creature, which I actually noted that I completely forgot about that being in this movie. It was like, no,
this is a wild scene. Okay, well, let's repeat the question.
Sorry. During the coronation scene, Frost giants break into Asgard attempting to steal the casket of ancient winters. That's the thing like Loki arranged for them to do. And
do they ever say that, by the way? Because I was like, what's that thing that they're
I think they do
they do say it. The casket event. Okay, I was just like, nobody told me what the suitcase is. Another movie and another suitcase. Like, I'm very confused.
I guess.
Okay.
So.
Okay. And then there was something protecting it.
What stops them in that scene? They're trying to do it, and how are they thwarted?
Oh, I thought one of the super friends was there and stopped them. I don't remember. I'm going to
No.
call them the super friends, by the way. The word, I don't know.
I think the word creature on here is a bit misleading.
What?
It's not exactly a creature. It's the destroyer armor.
Okay. I think I just kind of glazed over at that.
Yeah,
I really
so
did.
it's this suit of armor that in the comics you kind of inhabit it, so you control it. You don't go into it, but you from afar, kind of like Loki does. I guess Loki is, to skip ahead to the finale, the final battle, he's kind of inhabiting it in a way and controlling it, but he's not in the armor. But it's this thing that's meant to be this indestructible force that protects
Okay.
Asgard, and so it has that big beam it shoots out of its head that's really
Oh,
powerful.
the big giant guy. Okay. The big iron giant guy.
The
Yes.
big Iron Giant's a different movie. But yeah, that suit of armor. Actually, I think we're going to toss it over to Penny's corner because she had a bit of an observation from something that happened in the movie and she wanted to share it. So, Penny, take it away.
Hi, my name is Penny, and this is Penny's Corner. And today we're talking about Thor. And the fun fact of Thor is that one of the agents in the movie is talking to Coulson and asks if the destroyer armor is one of Stark's. And then Coulson replies back, "I don't know, he never talks to him." I thought it was good because they mention Tony Stark, which is obviously Iron Man, which is the guy from our two previous movies we have done. Anyways, that is all for Penny's Corner today, and see you next time. Bye.
Yes, that's true, and it's another one of those little references that keeps the whole thing connected. There's a few of those type of things in the movie, and they've always got to sprinkle those throughout here and there. So thank you for that, Penny. Next up, who helps the Frost Giants to infiltrate Asgard during Thor's coronation? All right, we already went
That'll be
over that.
Loki.
Yep,
And I knew it. I knew it all the time.
and again, some of these are redundant. I guess because they're not meant to be told in this method
All
where
at
we just go
once.
down the
Yeah. They're
list.
supposed to come up randomly.
It's part of a game. My wife got it from me for Hanukkah one year or something, and there are rules, but I haven't basically used them because I haven't had an opportunity for it. So this podcast is a perfect time to finally make use of these cards.
It's a good device. I'm glad you have
Yeah,
them.
it's a fun segment. What race call Jotunheim their home?
The Frost Giants.
There you go. Yeah, we've been talking all
I
about
almost I know I almost call them the ice gargoyles again, though. I gotta tell you,
them.
when I get something in my head, it's hard for me to get rid of it. Frost Giants.
Yes. And this even goes back to what event interrupts Thor's coronation as king?
Those frost giants coming in and trying to
Yep.
spoil the party.
Frost giant attack.
Yeah.
How does Loki defeat Heimdall? Okay, this is different.
Oh, okay. So Heimdall is Idris Elba.
Yes.
Which at first I was like, what an underuse of Idris Elba. But he does get to do some cool stuff towards the end of the movie, so that was okay. And there he's like standing off and he's like the guard, right? You shall not pass type of role.
He's the guard of the Bifrost, the Rainbow Bridge, and he controls
Bifrost.
who comes and goes, even though apparently there are things that sneak by even his notice where he's supposed to be all seeing. And there are other ways of accessing Asgard, clearly, which Loki makes a point of telling him. But so, yeah, in the scene where Loki is confronting him and he's trying to fight him, how does
He
Loki defeat?
totally encases him in ice, like he freezes him,
Yep.
like Mr. Freeze machine guy, whatever you call
Yeah, he
it.
freezes him with his frost giant powers, his true heritage. Okay, we already did this. Who is also known as the God of Mischief?
Loki.
I don't think that even comes up in the movie,
It
honestly.
doesn't, although, I mean,
Well,
you
maybe it's in
get.
that little book. Maybe when they show a quick glimpse of him in the book,
Oh,
maybe that's.
maybe the children's book. Yeah. And you do get to see him doing some fun sort of stuff during battles where he's replicating himself and he's really hiding in the corner. It's
Yeah,
kind of
so.
mischievous.
Yeah.
So they give a little nod to it, but I don't think they actually say it. You're right.
Yeah, I don't think he's referred to it directly within the context of Asgard or anything. What item of Jane's does Thor retrieve from the shield facility?
Oh. He took one of her things?
Yeah, when he had that whole thing, he couldn't get
Yeah,
much.
no, I remember they stole all her stuff, which is really rude. And I thought Shield was supposed to like Shield, but that's a little bit
Well,
rude.
they've still got their own
They
agenda.
make up for it at the end, but
Yeah, they've got their agenda. They're trying to do their own thing, so they don't care about our heroes if they get in the way. So just think of they took a lot of stuff from her. Think of something he could have taken in his hands that.
I don't remember the laptop, notebook. What
Notebook.
was it? Notebook.
Her
Okay. There you
notebook.
go. Do you know what? It's funny, as I'm watching the devastation of Jane and Stellar Skateboard and Kat Dennings when they get robbed, and I'm thinking, oh man, you guys didn't back up to the cloud? Oh wait, it's 2011. There's no cloud yet. It's one of those last movies. You know how you see a movie and it's like, oh, if only they had a
Cell
cell
phone,
phone.
yeah.
If only they had the cloud, this wouldn't be such a big
True.
problem.
So then
Or
probably Shield would have blocked their access or
this
something.
is true. There's always a way.
All right, which realm does Odin refer to as the realm eternal?
The realm eternal.
I mean, think of Odin and what he, you know, he might be a little biased.
Oh, Asgard. Okay,
Yeah,
yeah. All right. Okay. Hometown.
What is the name of Thor's hammer?
Mjolnir.
Yep,
I
or
knew that one already, though.
as Darcy calls it, Mjolnir.
Meow, meow. Oh, can I interrupt to talk about
Go
Dorothy
ahead.
for a second?
Sure.
I recognized that character, and I didn't remember the
Right.
specifics of it,
Right.
but I'm sure she was in probably, I want to say, WandaVision,
Yep.
right? Something with S.H.I.E.L.D., I want to say, but I don't remember specific. I kind of want to rewatch WandaVision, but I want to get a few more movies in before I start messing with that. Yeah, I think she's involved later, and that's all I'm
But she
going
does
to
something where
say.
she's like infiltrating the bubble of Westview, I think.
Yeah. She's definitely not just the sort of comical assistant
Yeah, she's
to
definitely the
Jane.
comic relief. I mean, there's comedy throughout, but yeah, she's definitely played more for laughs
Yeah.
and like pop culture references. She's like, oh, I'm gonna put this on Facebook and takes a picture of him in the cafe and
Yeah,
stuff.
it was fun. Yeah, she is a fun character, but I was like, she shows up later. I know this person.
Yeah. I meant to say also on the note of Darcy, her and Selvig are new creations to this film.
Oh,
They did
okay.
not pre-exist in the comics, though since then they've both been introduced into the comics.
Okay, that's
That sometimes
interesting.
happens. They carry over. So like Coulson also did not exist before Iron Man,
Okay.
but he's since become a part of the Marvel comic universe.
Gotcha.
All right, what is the name of the Asgardian gatekeeper? We already went over that, but
Heimdall.
there you
Heimdall.
go.
Heimdall. One of them.
Heimdall, yeah.
Heimdall.
Who tells Heimdall about Thor's journey to Jotunheim so that Odin will come to the rescue?
Loki?
Yep.
Yeah,
Yeah,
right.
he's
'Cause he went on
manipulating
with him,
events.
but then he went and told them right away that he was doing it. I remember. I'm gonna
Once
go tell
again,
Dad.
yep, basically he's just putting all the chess pieces where he wants them. Who saves Thor from falling from the destroyed Bifrost Bridge?
Oh,
At the very
it's
end.
at the end. Odin?
Yep, there
Yeah.
you go. Another question with Odin. What is Jane's surname?
Ooh, that's surprisingly difficult.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Jane, they said it for sure. Doctor something. Is there an S?
Yeah. Wait, what's your letter?
S? Is there
S,
an
no.
S? Oh.
Thinking you said a different letter. That sounds.
Oh, did I say F? Did you think I said F?
Yes, I did.
Jane, I can't remember.
Foster.
Foster. Okay. I feel like they don't say that enough, the last name very much.
On the note of Jane, I'll mention she does exist in the comics. I don't know if
Okay.
she was in the very first appearance of Thor, but she's probably within a few issues at least. She was the long-standing love interest in the comics, especially in the old comics. She was a nurse.
I knew it. I knew you were going to say she wasn't a scientist.
Yeah, so again,
Because this is yet another movie where, again, the woman scientist, she gives the guy a place to crash for the night, doesn't do all that much other than that. That's sort of the big contribution.
But yeah, so much like with Pepper Potts' role in the Iron Man films, they upped the female's sort of presence and
Good.
worth. And again, these comics were written in the early 60s. So for better or worse, it was a different time.
Yes.
And they were very just concerned with let's get a love interest in there. But then I did mention that Pepper Potts was not a romantic interest until like after the films because she was with Happy Hogan in the comics.
Hogan. Did you say one of the Warriors Three was named Hogan?
Yeah, that's true, but it's Hogun.
Oh, sure. Okay.
So, but it is
Totally
interesting.
different.
I don't think I ever made that connection, but Happy Hogan is with an A.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I was going to mention. So she was a nurse because in the comics, which is something they totally threw away for the films, Thor had a secret identity. So again, like we said
Another secret
with the
identity.
Iron Man thing at the end of the first movie, they kind of tossed those aside and they went that way with Thor. They give a little Easter egg in this movie and that's about it. And it's like, okay, haha, that one's for you fans. Now move on. When she's helping him out early on, she has a piece of clothing and it's got a name tag on it.
Oh
And it
yeah,
says Dr.
her ex-boyfriend or
Donald.
something.
Yeah, Dr. Donald Blake or Don Blake.
Right.
Like, oh, that's an ex of mine. Good with patients, not so good with relationships. And like that's about it. And then like they use that as his cover with
Right,
shield.
to get out of the shield facility.
But in reality, he had that dual identity. In the comics, the first appearance of Thor, he's Dr. Donald Blake on vacation in Norway or something. And he's walking in a cave and he has a walking stick. And something happens with a rock and he's trying to use it for leverage and he jams it. And when he slams the walking stick on the ground, it becomes Mjolnir and he becomes Thor. So that's how it was in the early days. He did have a human alter ego, and that's where he connected with this nurse, Jane Foster.
Okay.
There's a little background history for you on that. Getting back to these cards. Okay. Over how many realms is Odin the protector? Five, seven, or nine?
Nine.
Yep, there are nine realms. Very good. How does Thor prove himself worthy of reclaiming his power?
Oh, he goes to offer himself to the Iron Giant. I'm just going to call him the Iron Giant. The suit of armor guy. Loki's the puppet.
Sure.
Loki's golem. And he basically sacrifices himself to save everybody else.
That's right. He sacrifices his own life to protect his friends against the Destroyer.
The Destroyer!
There
Iron Giant.
you go. Yeah, go ahead, call him whatever you want. You got these fun names left and right.
That's how I remember things.
Oh, this is funny. I wrote this down as one of my notes. At the end, when they're wrapping everything up with S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff, by what name does Thor call Agent Coulson?
Oh, that I do not remember. You're gonna have to tell
Well,
me.
he's applying like Asgardian naming logic to it, I guess, because his full name is Thor Odinson.
Odinson. Is it son of Cole?
He calls him Son of Cole.
I missed that. That's clever. I like the Odin business. I really enjoyed the concept of Odin sleep. I thought it was hilarious. I was like, I need to go get some Odin sleep. Like, I'm going to use that the next time I need to take a mental health day. I'm going to get some Odin sleep. It was great. A lot of fun, Odin sleep.
Yeah, that is a concept in the comics where usually it's done intentionally, not where he's falling down. It's like where it's like a rejuvenation period, basically.
Just need that one day to recharge and then I'm good for the year.
All right, who intends to destroy Jotunheim using the Bifrost Bridge?
Loki.
That's right. Loki's always doing all the
Yeah,
mischief. All
he's
right, one more card
all
here. In which American state does Thor arrive on Earth? I mean, there's three options, but I'm sure you could just
is
tell
New
me.
Mexico.
Yeah,
They don't go anywhere else.
Texas, Arizona, or New Mexico is what the card says. What are the names of the three people who first encounter Thor after he arrives on Earth? Okay, we've gone over that kind of too, but you want to go ahead?
Dr. Jane Foster, Dr. Eric Selvig, and
Good.
Darcy something or other.
Yep. It just says Eric, Jane, and Darcy on the
Eric, Jane, and
card. So
Darcy.
you're good? All right, this is stupid easy. Who banishes Thor to Earth?
Dad. He gets mad at him. Odin does.
Odin. What animal does Thor attempt to buy to help him travel to his
A
hammer?
horse at the
Yep.
pet shop. That
Pet
was a
shop.
fun scene. I liked that sort of bit of silent comedy from the pet shop
Yep.
clerk. Just the looks, the expressions on his face were very funny.
Yeah. And who sneaks into the S.H.I.E.L.D. facility to visit Thor where he is held captive?
That's Eric. Stellarscape. Oh, it's not. Oh, what are we?
He's held captive. Coulson says, "I'll be right back." And what happens? He's visited by someone who's able to.
Oh, Loki. Oh, I'm
There you go.
sorry. Yes. There
No,
you go. I'm thinking of when Stellar Skateboard came and
he came and
broke him
bails him
out.
out. Yeah, with
But
his.
you're right. Yeah, Loki came in to sort of be like, Dad's dead and I'm a jerk and no, you can't come back. And then he runs away. It's really mean. Bad brother stuff.
Yeah, not the best of brother. I don't remember. Did you mention where that early flashback with Odin on Earth took place? I think you might have.
I don't remember the early flashback with Odin
Well, in
on
the
Earth.
beginning, where he's like talking all about their history, you have the voiceover from Anthony Hopkins.
Oh,
They show
when?
where you thought there might be a Stanley cameo.
Oh, were they? Well, I guess were they in Norway?
Yeah,
Norway,
it's
yeah.
specifically Tonsberg, Norway.
Okay.
And it's not the last we're going to hear of that place.
Interesting.
There's a little thing coming up soon enough. Oh, one thing bothered me. Again, I'm a stickler for keeping things
We've
as
seen this.
close to the comics as possible. So in the ceremony, the coronation, he's got this helmet on, the metal helmet, and it's got these
The
wing-shaped things.
wings.
In the comics, he wears this helmet, especially the old comics, and they're actual feathery wings. But okay, if they wanted to adapt it to the thing, make it look more reasonable, that's fine. This ceremonial thing is the only time he ever wears a helmet. Like,
Yeah, I almost thought that was a clever reference, like the Hulk's purple pants in the Hulk, where they're a throwaway reference to the iconic look from the comic book. And it was familiar looking to me because have you ever seen the movie Adventures in Babysitting?
oh,
The kid is obsessed with Thor, I guess, from the
yes.
comics, right? Because she has the helmet,
Right.
the silver helmet with the wings
Right.
on it. But yeah, you're right. He doesn't wear that anymore. He's just like
No,
a dude
that's like a
walking
one,
around.
that's a one and done. At one point, he has a helmet that looks not quite the same, but it's the closest thing. But this is the comic accurate helmet, or the closest thing we're going to get to it. It's just ceremonial. But you'd think he goes into fights, into battle. You'd
Shouldn't
think
you have a helmet?
for combat, you know,
Protect that
it's just
noggin.
ceremonial. But, you know.
Ridiculous. Meanwhile, at the end, Loki gets to wear this weird, almost it was serving Maleficent horns
Yeah.
to me, the black horns
Because in the
situation.
comics, he has that look where he has these big kind of
Okay.
things. So it's the closest he gets to that comic look as well. Interesting you mentioned the Adventures in Babysitting, because do you remember the actor who plays the guy that she thinks is Thor?
Oh, D'Onofrio, right? Vincent D'Onofrio. Is
He's
he in the MCU?
going to have a role to play.
Oh, how fun. Okay, I didn't know
But
he was in
on the
Fate.
other side of the coin, not the hero side, not the hero side.
Oh, Evil D'Onofrio, our favorite.
And he's maybe even still one of the best villains in the whole thing.
I'm intrigued because
At
I have
least,
no idea who you're talking about, like what character you're talking
his
about.
early appearances are like really great villainy. You did mention Frigga or Freya. She's in this, Renee Russo.
Yeah, not
She's.
much for her to do, but
Nah,
cool,
yeah.
cool to see her, I guess.
So she's portrayed Odin's wife and also Thor and Loki's mother, adoptive with Loki, obviously. In the comics, she is not Thor's true birth mother. In the comics, it's Gaia, which is an earth goddess.
Sure.
So it's Odin and Gaia. So it kind of shows his shared ties to Asgard and Earth. So
Okay. Oh,
wanted to
that's interesting.
mention that. Oh, yeah. Also, during that ceremony, Odin, like, he's like, oh, the frost giants. He's not all seeing like Heimdall. Like, how does he know when they're there? That's just something I noticed.
It's just everything. He knows
Odd.
everything.
Oh, and Volstagg, he had a previous role, not in this version, but in a previous film, one of those legacy films, Punisher Warzone. He played the Punisher. So he was actually a version of the Punisher before being Volstagg.
Okay. I
Okay,
don't
we're.
know the Punisher.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe you'll get to know him a little bit. Oh, getting back to the beginning for a second. Again, I don't want to have so many feeling of things. This is the thing that bothered me, and this is the thing that
I
bothered
like this. I think this should be a segment, actually.
me. It's hard
Like
because
Zach's beefs.
it's spread out. I had once considered doing like a YouTube series of just my complaints for each Marvel film, but
Think that's
I
fun.
was going to call it the Nerdy Boys Nitpick, where it's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
That is the name of the segment. And now the Nerdy Boys
Annoying
Nitpick with
complaints
Zach.
at the Nerdy Boys
Is
Nitpick.
there a theme song? Brilliant.
Well,
I love it.
you get that reference, right?
No.
You don't? Oh, I thought that's why you were laughing.
No, it's just funny. What is it?
It's Ladybug's Picnic from Sesame Street.
Oh.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. The ladybugs came to the ladybugs picnic.
I wish I had as deep and abiding a Sesame Street knowledge as you did. I have love, but not as comprehensive
Sure,
a
I get it.
memory.
I just thought for
I
people
love it.
to
I love
remember
it.
that was a popular segment. It was a cartoon. But yeah, towards the beginning, when we get to him where it catches up and he's been hit by them and he's staggering around in the night in New Mexico, he's going like hammer, hammer. And I'm like, the
Yeah.
hammer has a name. It's called Mjolnir. Why would he
That's a good point.
be just calling it? It's just for the sake of the, yeah, we know you're hammered joke. Like,
Yeah,
really?
that's literally why.
And also, I think he goes, oh, this is Earth. It's like Earth to Asgardians is Midgard. I don't think
Yeah.
they ever once call it Midgard in here, and that bugged me too.
He says it really briefly when he's drawing the little map of the Nine
Oh, for the
Realms
night.
for
Okay, that
Jane
would make
in the
sense.
trailer park. But you're right. That's a good point. He wouldn't be saying Earth. And the only reason he doesn't say Midgard is because they didn't call it that before that moment, which they could have easily written in somehow. But you're right. I'm agreeing with your nitpicks, you know?
I appreciate it. People think I'm such a fan. Like, it's not, doesn't mean I have slavish devotion. If anything, my big
We
fan.
have a higher standard, right? As
Exactly. There you go. I want it to be the best it can be. The way I don't have a ranking of these movies, but the ones that are higher up on my list, they're the ones that I had the least to complain about. That's really what it
Yeah,
comes down to.
that's true. Well, I mean, if I had to rank the ones I've seen so far, I think this comes, well, it's hard. I liked Iron Man the best still. I guess between Iron Man 2 and this, it's about even. It's about even. Hulk is definitely still at the bottom. But as we
Gotcha.
go on, we'll see if that shifts.
Yeah, maybe we can make you make a ranking as you go on. And you could move things around as you watch
I'm
more
a
than.
little more pure because this is all very new to me. So, you know,
Sure.
I don't bring all the baggage to it that you do.
Yes. Oh, and another thing I was going to mention, the one who first discovers the hammer is another pickup truck driver guy. He comes out and he starts pulling on it, and that leads to everyone finding out about it and everybody giving it a shot. That is J. Michael Straczynski. Have you ever heard of him?
Yeah, because his name was totally in the credits or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, he gets a story by credit, but also I think he created Babylon 5.
Yes. Okay. I think Sean, I watched it with my husband again, and he was like, oh, J. Michael Straczynski. So he totally knew who that guy was.
Yeah, he's also a fairly prolific comic book writer, and some elements of one of his runs on Thor were in here. So he's got the story by credit, but even beyond that, it lifts from some of his story, like the hammer crash landing in the desert and just being there and everyone trying to find it. That is from a run of his, maybe within a handful of years before this film came out. But the circumstances are very different, but that element definitely. And here's another thing I wasn't sure of. I don't know if maybe you understand or can explain it, the physics of it all. So it flies down from the beam when Odin casts him out
Right.
and throws it behind him after he puts on on the Worthy Enchantment. It crash lands, and when we see it there, there's this huge crater, but it's on like a mound of dirt.
In the crater. Yeah, how did that work?
I would think that would be the lowest point. So maybe it would be further down the crater, and then there'd be the rest of the crater, but it would be deeper. So I don't get why it's got...
That does not scan for me either. It's like they want us to believe it went so far in that it bounced up a little mountain back with itself. I don't see how that really works. I thought it was funny when Loki was like, it was cruel of Father to something like put the hammer so close to Thor and knowing that you couldn't possibly be worthy of picking it up or something. What a meanie.
Yeah, when he tries, he's all confident and he marches in there and he's making easy work of all these shield guys.
Yeah.
And he's like ready to just reclaim it. And then when he can't do it, it's just like such a defeat. It's almost sad for him. Like he cries out to the sky, why?
Yeah, it's a bummer moment for sure. Even though you could see it coming. Yeah. They wouldn't have him be so confident if he was going to just easily pluck it out of there. Okay, it can't be that simple.
End of the movie. I mean, I think also in this, there's some really good acting, I think, especially Tom Hiddleston.
Oh, you know.
He seems very like maybe a classically trained Shakespearean actor. Like when he confronts Odin, when he discovers the truth of his nature, or he gets an idea and he confronts him like, what am I? What's the truth? When he shouts out with like pain and rage,
you can feel that.
It's so justified, even though he's a villain. Yeah.
I want to say, and I don't want to be mean about it, I think he's probably kind of a better actor. I really had a problem with Hemsworth, and I don't think he's bad or anything. It was more interesting to watch Loki. There was more subtlety to the performance. He had to play more subtlety, to be fair. He was playing a duplicitous character, sure. So he had to hide things. I think he did do some good work there, and it was easier to believe him.
Yeah, I don't think that would exactly be like a uncommon take. I think acting-wise in the chops, Hiddleston really brings it here. And Hemsworth, he's new, he's fresh, he's kind of like doing the action guy thing, and he's got some emotional moments, but maybe they don't hit quite as hard. Hiddleston actually auditioned for Thor. You can sometimes see clips of it online where he's got a long flowing blonde wig.
He doesn't seem like the physical type somehow.
Right. But... they made the right choice in the end to make him look.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Hemsworth and his likability or something. I think as things go along, you'll like him more. Like here, he's on full on Shakespearean drama mode with some moments of humor. But I think the way they crack the code with Thor is to just kind of make him more humorous. Some people would say as it goes on to his detriment, like the last two Thor movies were directed by Taika Waititi.
Oh, okay.
And you could argue that he really just leaned into the humor a bit much. And the films to varying degrees suffered for it, but I think
Thor as a fish out of water in New Mexico on Earth, on Midgard, is more interesting to watch, at least for me watching this movie, than the scenes where he was in Asgard and in Jotunheim. I think when he's just like big Norse hero in big Norse sequence, you know, frost giants, it's fine, but it's sort of standard. He fits in the scenes too well, whereas the fish out of water stuff is fun, is more interesting for me to watch him wandering around Earth, stopping traffic, trying to buy horses and stuff. That to me is a good, like, that's a classic movie premise. So I found that more enjoyable. And I think I can see him doing well as part of an ensemble. You know what I mean? Not being the focus.
We've got that coming up very soon.
Yeah. I mean, and I know that's coming. I know from the zeitgeist that he's going to be in these like movies as part of a team. I think that's going to be a little bit, I don't know, more likable for me than just him. To me, he doesn't carry a movie so well by himself, but as part of an ensemble, I can see him working well.
I think that's fair. Another one of these questions where you wonder, well, why didn't they do it this way? Or why did they do that? When they're in the diner and these guys walk in, the sort of like blue collar guys, and they're just talking for the sole purpose of
their exposition conversation.
Yeah, for the sole purpose of the heroes to pick up on what they're talking about. They're like, yeah, the satellite fell and stuff. Oh, yeah. Why wouldn't they just say, yeah, it looks like a hammer?
Yes.
Thor figures out what they're talking about, but like
I actually thought the same thing. I was like, they're being weirdly cagey with this conversation. Yeah, like,
it's clearly a hammer or a mallet of some kind.
Wouldn't you walk in going, did you see that giant hammer?
Yeah. Hey, have you guys taken your turn trying to pull that hammer from the
right. No. Let's go pull the hammer out.
The satellite.
Silly.
Oh, and another one of these crossover-y kind of reference moments. Selvig mentions, there was this scientist who was a pioneer in gamma radiation and S.H.I.E.L.D. disappeared him or whatever. So that seems like it's a clear reference to Bruce Banner.
Because I kind of got that, I think, in the moment. I was like, they're talking about Hulk, right?
Yeah, when you bring up gamma radiation, there's really not.
That's the one. That's
it's
the
not
gamma
likely
guy.
They're talking about anyone else. So again, it's just like, all right, let's throw that in there to show this connection. Oh, he's aware of Bruce Banner. It's in the scientific community, I guess. So that's where he kind of has an idea of what S.H.I.E.L.D.'s all about and why he's weary of them. So that's, again, they have these little lines here and there that are just supposed to sort of plant these things that or explain things away, you know?
I had a question about Jeremy Renner.
Okay.
Because I recognize him, again, I don't think I've ever seen anything he's ever been in, but I feel like I recognize him from pop culture. I think he had an app.
Yeah.
Or comically
yeah,
had an app or something.
People
he's
make
been
jokes
on talk
about that
shows.
Still.
Right. So I'm like, Jeremy Renner, oh, he must be somebody. Like, why is he here? He seemed too prevalent a personage to just have this little cameo. So I was wondering what his deal was. Why was he there? Who's that? Who's that guy? Did they even say his name? I don't think they say his name.
They might quickly mention his last name. Coulson's asking him to help out.
Right.
He's there to serve the role that Scarlett Johansson did in Iron Man 2. He is a character that was not up to the level of deserving a solo movie prior to the Avengers. Okay. So he was introduced in a bigger characters movie.
Okay.
So he's Clint Barton.
Okay.
And he is also known as Hawkeye. That is his code name.
Hawkeye. Okay,
I don't know.
I've heard of this.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know if they, at least in the early stages, ever call him that. There's one throwaway line in Avengers that's a reference, and it's the closest we get. At least as far as I can remember, I think that's it.
So he doesn't ever, does he ever get his own movie?
He gets a TV show on Disney Plus.
Oh, we're not going to watch that, are we? Let's see how far we go. I guess by then I'll
The tricky part with the series is they would take a lot more time to watch. Yeah. So I thought maybe we'll dip our feet in, and if we watch like an episode or two of a thing, if you like what you're seeing,
okay,
we can
fair.
Keep going with it. Like, for instance, down the road we have Daredevil, which was a Netflix series.
Okay.
And I think the general consensus would agree with me that it is the best of those Netflix series.
Mm.
And they recently brought Daredevil back as a Disney Plus follow-up that's supposed to kind of keep with the continuity. So
I have no idea who that is, Daredevil. This
okay,
is
well, we will educate.
How fun.
that's what the fun of this is I can help you learn who it is, and you
Excellent.
Can learn. You learn through the experience of watching these things, and then I can fill in the gaps from the comics.
Thank you, Sensei.
Yes, anytime. That's what we're here for. But there's a show coming up following the Avengers that I watched for a while, but was never so super into it. And eventually I gave up, and there were a few seasons after. I'd say we're probably only going to get like an episode or two of that. I mean, if you're really intrigued and you want to watch more, we could take it from there.
Okay.
But it'll vary. I think we'll leave it up to the series on a case-by-case basis.
Excellent.
So like if you want to rewatch all of Wanda, hey, we could do
that. I might. That was a fun ride.
Agatha. So
even better.
So he's Hawkeye. You see, oh, I need a gun up in the air. And he's about to grab the gun. And then he pauses and he gets the bow. And so he's this unseen face.
Okay.
And you see he grabs the bow. And that's the clue to all the nerds. Oh my God, it's Hawkeye. Because he's the bow and arrow guy, basically.
Whenever something I don't understand happens, I'm like, oh, this is for the nerds. Whatever this one's for the nerds.
So he says, get a gun. And then he's about to get a gun. But he's like, you know what? Let me go with the bow and arrow instead.
I liked him sort of watching Thor dispatch with all the S.H.I.E.L.D. guys and going, I'm kind of starting to like this guy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's a fun time.
Yeah, he's like, you want me to take him out or you want to have a few more guys get, you know.
Right. And then the explanation for how the supposed doctor, what's his name, Don Blake? How did he dispatch with all my guys? And it's like, oh, he's a health nut. He's
right.
Really defensive.
Steroids, yeah.
Steroids, yeah.
Yeah.
Fun.
It's interesting because he's like that, but it makes me question where the extent of being outcast goes, because I strip you of your power, but then that, I guess that's
still really strong though.
Yeah, I guess he takes away Mjolnir and the ability with it to call down the thunder and lightning, but it's like he still has his Asgardian physique, which I guess is
right.
Technically stronger than your average mortal man. So I guess
right.
That's kind of how it goes. He doesn't have that element of power stripped from him.
Well, it's interesting, just thinking, they don't give us too much. They sort of lightly sketch in the world of Asgard and all that, because I guess they're not actually gods. Are they immortal? They've lived for a long time.
That's another thing I was actually just about to mention.
They have to eat and drink, you know, because that one guy's been has an appetite.
Yes, exactly. But my next note was about this. So Selvig is like, oh, he's talking about Thor and Mjolnir and Bifrost. These are the stories from my youth. So then they go in the bookstore and he picks up the Norse mythology book and they're like, oh, look, there's Mjolnir, there's Loki. The way it's presented in this movie, I think it doesn't check out that it means we have all the Norse mythology that we have in our world, that they have it in that world. That means they've experienced and seen everybody. You know, that they saw them all firsthand and then wrote it down.
Where'd we get it from?
Treated
it
like gods.
Who saw them?
It makes me also, in that note, question Thor and Loki's ages. Because here we initially see them as kids and he's talking, one of you is going to take the throne one day. Then it jumps ahead and Thor's ready to be coronated, if that's a word, as the new king. But how much time elapsed? And he comes to Earth / Midgard and he seems like, oh, this is Earth. And he's taking it in. But then how would the Norse mythology...
How'd they know about you for the mythology
Thor
book?
Be there where they would know, oh yeah, the God of Thunder with Mjolnir, all that. How would they have it? That would mean he would have had to have been there and experienced. And Loki would have been on Earth and doing trickster stuff. And all the other gods that are in all the Norse mythology books. So it doesn't track with me. So that's
I really think they sort of fudge this a little bit and they want to have it both ways, right?
Yeah, that's why I wish they just went full on. Again, I think they were playing it too safe in the early days of trying to build an audience and trying to make it as grounded as they could. Just make it. They are those Norse gods, just like in
make
comics.
Them gods.
That's what they are.
We got with the world of superheroes. P.S. Why is everybody so surprised when things start raining down from the sky and portals start opening? Are we not in a world of superheroes here?
Yeah, I guess
S.H.I.E.L.D. exists.
It's still early. Tony Stark is the most public, well-known figure at this point.
Right.
There's the news footage, but otherwise he's probably isolated to those certain little, the college campus and whatever. So it's still not the bigger world population probably only has so much knowledge of it.
Which is also kind of a fudge. Yeah, Sean said something like, my husband said, oh, they're a small town in New Mexico. They don't know. And I'm like, they have the internet. It's 2011. Like, if Tony Stark... If Iron Man was doing stuff in Queens, they'd hear about it in New Mexico. There's internet.
Yeah,
but again, I think we're supposed to just accept certain things.
He's a very
things.
Public figure, very public profile, made it known immediately that he is Iron Man. So people
we have to accept a certain amount of crazy magic.
Yeah. So that's where I feel like them trying to have it both ways with the magic and the thing, it doesn't track because of that one meant that people in Norway would have had to have personally seen and experienced all of it to then go, oh, those were gods. Let's write them down and draw pictures.
Right.
So
something they did try to have it both ways there. It's a little
and
odd.
I mean, later down the road, it's pretty far down the road, but they do kind of have gods and goddesses. So it just seems like, well, there
so
are.
Why are and but Odin isn't a god.
There's even,
a god.
Even much more recently, there are multiple afterlifes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So it shows there is this stuff. I think that it's just because they're like, well, we're big enough, let's just go all out. But it kind of contradicts that most of these ones were just these advanced space aliens from a distant world. But then these other characters,
those guys are gods.
Are gods? So then is Thor a god? Yeah, that's one of my nitpicks. Oh, I don't know if you appreciated this. When Sif and the Warriors 3 arrive, they're dressed as they're dressed, and they're in New Mexico town.
Yes.
They kind of stand
Not
out. They're walking through like a main street, and I guess they're S.H.I.E.L.D. agents on a roof, and they're like, we got Xena, Jackie Chan, and Robin Hood.
Yeah, that was fun. And is there a Ren Faire in town? What's going on?
That's the closest thing you could make of that. So yeah, then there's all this plotting. Loki's doing his thing. Odin's in the Odin sleep. And then Loki goes back to the Frost Giants to try to make a deal with them to say, hey, you can take him out now. He's weak and you can go for it. And then you find out he's playing them too, because then they come to kill Odin in the Odin sleep. And he kills his own father.
Take him out. Right
his,
there.
His biological father. So he betrays him, because then that makes him look like a hero. Then, oh, look, he saved Odin. And he's the temporary king now, because Thor's exiled, Odin's in the Odin sleep, and he's cunning throughout it, all these little moves he's making. And then there's a final battle. We had the final battle in the desert with the Destroyer, with Sif, the Warriors 3, and Thor, and that's where he sacrifices himself, like we mentioned. Then he comes back with Mjolnir, and he's beating the thing down. I did like, I don't know if you thought this was cool, the moment where Sif stabs the thing, and it seems like it's done, but it reverses itself.
Yes. So that was amazing.
It's leaning down, and then like it twists the head and the hands, and then it's facing her, and it's about to blast her. But in the end, with Thor and his battle abilities and the strength of Mjolnir, he takes it out. But then he has to go confront Loki on it. But even still, when he's confronting him, he doesn't want to fight him. They still have that brotherly bond, and he knows he's been manipulating these things, but he's like, I don't want to fight you, bro. But they fight, and then they're on the Rainbow Bridge after he left Earth and told Jane, I'll be back sometime, where they finally share a kiss.
Right.
I meant to mention this because you were talking about it. I think it was maybe, I don't know how common it was, but I think people kind of felt they did lack chemistry, at least in this film.
It's
not the best.
It felt strange to me. I think she was like gamely trying to show hard eyes or whatever, but I didn't feel the connection either. I thought it was like, they didn't even, I mean, he's talking about her like this love of his life. Like he's acting like this love of their life, but they haven't even really kissed.
It doesn't feel earned really. Like, you know,
it doesn't feel earned.
It's happening because he's the male lead and she's the female lead.
Yeah, it's like, okay, these two good looking people are definitely going to get together, everybody. It's all, they did a little, again, they're sort of glossing over things and expecting us to just go for it without really writing it in properly. But okay. Sure.
But then
all the sins, it wasn't the worst sin they could have done.
Yeah, it's not terrible, but it's not as good as it could be.
And it did make for a very sweet little last moment in the movie, I thought. I actually did like that.
So then he flies off and he's fighting Loki and they're on the Rainbow Bridge, which in the comics is actually like a literal rainbow. And I think it's more like a direct, I don't know where it's supposed to be, the specifics of it, because I don't think it's always like Earth can always see this huge rainbow that leads up to Asgard, but it's depicted as a literal rainbow, where here there's sort of a glistening colory prism to this sort of crystal bridge that leads to this chamber that then through Heimdall or whoever wields the sword can send you on your way to different places.
Right. It looks like technology. It looks like some kind of like microchip thing, but a glistening rainbow. I wasn't sure exactly what they were going for, but it was just, I guess, a design choice. It looked a little techy.
Right, but yeah, it's meant to be a more direct connection between Earth and Asgard in the comics and a literal rainbow, like a cartoony.
Sure.
With the colors.
Rainbow Bright style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so then now they're fighting on it and he's beating him, and I don't know if you appreciate this. I always thought it's a cool moment when he just needs a break, a breather. He has Loki knocked down and he plants Mjolnir on him.
Yeah.
Because then he can't get up because he's not worthy. He can't lift it off. Himself. So it's
yeah,
not,
that was pretty good.
It's not crushing his bones or anything because it's an enchantment. It's not like it means it weighs thousands of tons because then it would just crush him, but it has immovable weight because of the enchantment. But then in the end, he again makes a noble sacrifice because he just pounds the bridge to destroy it because Loki was using that chamber thing as a means to just like, so I guess even though he kind of got his way and was on the throne and manipulated his way there, he still wanted to take out the Frost Giant. So he's using that beam as a destructive force, almost like a Death Star kind of thing. It was tearing apart Jotunheim. I guess he wanted to full on go on, look, I am the savior and I defeated our greatest enemies. But so it's out of control. So the only way Thor can think to solve it is by cutting it off from the Bifrost, which ends up to it powering down. So I guess there was some sort of connection there that it was connected to the Rainbow Bridge to activate. So he destroys it, essentially destroying his ability to get back to Earth and Jane. So it's another sacrifice. And then in the fight, he and Loki fall off the ridge, but Odin, like we said in the trivia, comes and catches him. So he's holding Thor. Thor's holding a staff that's holding Loki, and then Loki lets go and sort of falls into the void.
I didn't see a body. And I know there's a series.
Well,
that's all I'm going to say.
They always say no body, no death. But like the implication is, oh, he died, he vanished, and the villain's been defeated, and Thor can't go back.
And they grieve him. It's like, it's a sad thing, actually. Like, his brother's dead.
Yeah.
You know, even though he went crazy and mad with power, still his brother.
But then it wraps up where we check and we see Jane is working diligently. She's now part of the S.H.I.E.L.D. machine.
Right.
And working on ways to try to reconnect and find him. So it's like a little hopeful moment to end on. And that's the end until... You did stay
for our post-credit sequence.
You did stay for the post-credits, right?
Very happy to see. Oh, of course I did. Now I know. It's part of the assignment.
Yep. So once again,
Fury.
There is a connective tissue. So we just see Selvig walking through this facility and he finds him and he starts talking to him about power and he presents him with this case and inside of it is...
I gotta tell you.
Describe it. What did you see?
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
I don't remember. I was so confused by the post-credit sequence. I did not understand why Loki was there in the reflection talking. Okay. Could they hear him? Was he being Eric? Was there a possession? What were they conveying here?
You're on the right track. So, you know, it kind of has become a running joke or maybe also frustration, criticism of the MCU that it's like, oh, death is not permanent. People come back. Like, this is a very short-lived death of Loki because by the post-credits, there he is again somehow. He looks a little worse for wear, but he's there.
This is like another suitcase thing, right? And there was some kind of red light device thing. What was in that thing?
There's a glowing blue cube.
Okay.
And if you'll remember from the last one, Iron Man 2, I mentioned that Tony Stark is flipping through his dad's old notes and he sees sort of a cube within a cube kind of thing.
Okay.
And that's in reference to this object.
All right.
That now Fury, now that he has this scientist on board, he's hoping that he can help him tap into this thing and unlock its power. And so then we see, like you say, in the reflection, Loki appears, but he's just in the reflection. He's not physically there where Fury could see him running. And he goes, well, that's certainly worth a look. And then Selvig says, well, that's certainly worth a look.
Right.
So that's planting in your head that he's somehow in there possessing Eric or however you want to call it. So like he now sees, oh, they've got this super powerful potential object. Let me see if I can take hold of it and do something.
Yeah.
Like.
Okay.
So that's a tease for a few things coming up. Basically, the next two movies. So do you know what the next one is?
I don't.
It's introducing our last key figure before the Avengers. And he's been hinted at before. Remember in Stark's laboratory? Remember what Stark uses to hold up that thing when he's making the new element?
No. This is going to be a tough road, Zach. As
Okay.
soon as I see the movie,
Captain
it flies
America.
from my head. Captain America, the
Remember
shield.
the
Okay,
shield?
yeah, that was the whole thing. Now I do remember.
So
Thank you.
That thing has a fair role to play in the next movie, Captain America's first solo movie, which also then leads to its role in the Avengers. So those are the next two we have coming up. Captain America, the first Avenger. It's a first movie, but they got a subtitle on it straight out of the gate. So that's the next one. It's similar to this. Well, this one isn't so much. There's a flashback in this, but it's not a period piece. But I meant to say similar to this in that there's the bookends on Earth on this one where it starts on Earth, then it goes to Asgard and then ends on Earth, and there's Earth in between. In Captain America, it's kind of bookended in modern times.
Okay.
But the majority of the movie is a period piece that takes
okay.
place during World
flashback.
War II.
Okay, sure.
So,
you know what? I don't remember who plays Captain America either. So just like discovering Chris Hemsworth, I'm going to
discover.
So
you don't
want to
know now? You just
no,
want to see?
Don't. It's just fun for me to be like, oh, duh, when I finally watch it.
Well, he has something in common with Chris Hemsworth, but I will
blonde
always...
guy?
Not,
is it blonde
not blonde,
guy?
Though he is. They make him blonde for the movie because the
sure.
character of Captain America is blonde, but he's not a natural blonde.
Okay.
But at that, I guess we'll wrap it up and move on to anticipating that one. Any final thoughts you have on this?
It was a pretty good time. I didn't feel it too much of a slog, or at all, anything of a slog. I think the thing that felt closest to a slog was probably Hulk. So yeah, no, there was a good time. I hope Captain America is more charismatic than Thor. That's all I have to say.
I think you'll find that to be the case.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and then we got the Big Bang team up right after that, which is what really kicked the MCU into the next gear. Because, again, that was the big thing of this shared universe, the potential for the team up of the Avengers, which in the end of the first movie, the first post-credit scene, that was what they teased, and that's what they've been building. And so that's going to be really exciting when we get there. But first,
excellent.
Captain America, the first Avenger, I'm looking forward to revisiting it. I like it a lot of the movies. I think the Captain America films are my favorite trilogy, so I'll say that much. But again, we'll start with the first one, and we'll go forward from there. So once again, thank you for joining me. It's been a fun discussion as always, and we will be back next time with Captain America, the first Avenger. Thanks so much, Tavy, and everybody, thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye.
See you next time.
Zach and Tavy's Marvelous Adventure is produced and co-hosted by Zach Walliner and Tavy Phillips, featuring Penny Walliner, edited by Zach Walliner, theme music by Luis Humanoid, cover art by Chris Giarusso. If you enjoy our show, please be sure to leave a nice review and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, and follow us on all the major social media sites and apps at Zach Tavy Marvel. That's ZachTavieMarvel. Thanks again for tuning in. Nuff said.